This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It's Tuesday, so that means it's time for TV on the radio. And today,
sunny day, sweeping up.
I can, because it's been 50 years since Sesame Street debuted, and we first met Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch, Cookie Monster, Bert and Ernie. Beyond teaching children letters and numbers, the show also deals with real adult problems like death, homelessness, racism, HIV. Well, now, half a century later, the show is still going strong. It reaches more than 100 million children around the world. Eric Deggans is here. He's TV critic for NPR. No longer a child, but maybe a child at heart.
I was going to say, yeah, you might want to ask my friends about that. Well, I think I am still pretty juvenile.
Well, in the best way, of course. And did you grow up watching Sesame Street? I did.
Absolutely.
Didn't we all?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of my prized possessions as a child was an original cast album. And one of the things I remember about that is that the front stoop that they showed, where a lot of the interaction with all the characters happened, it looked very much like the front stoop where I lived.
Which was
And
where?
That was one reason, in Gary, Indiana. And it felt so much more relatable to me than some of these other shows that were set in sort of fantasy lands or, you know, Mr. Rogers, where he would take you to the land of make-believe. It was fun to sort of see the Muppets hanging out on a front stoop that looked like mine.
Yeah, so an urban street had a multiracial cast. It was meant to be in reality. And why, though? Why did the people who created Sesame Street believe that this was the formula to attract children?
Well, I think at the time it was really new. And there weren't shows like it on the air. And, you know, this was a creation of public broadcasting. So I think there's a sense that they wanted to create a show that spoke to kids, that spoke to kids in urban environments, maybe that spoke to kids who didn't have the same kind of upbringings as some of the more suburban set, you know, children's TV shows that you might see on local television, or that even Mr. Rogers kind of felt like a more suburban show. So to have a kids show that was focused on an urban setting with a multiracial cast in environments where they were talking about real things. They wound up talking about breastfeeding. They wound up talking about death when the actor who played Mr. Hooper died unexpectedly. And so it was just a more real environment for children who lived in a very sort of real environment.
Well, they did, as you say, tackle these tough social issues. Let's play a scene from 1993. This is an episode where Gina, who's white, finds out that someone saw her hanging out with her friend Savion, as in Savion Glover, who's black. And then they explain the situation to Telly Monster, who is purple.
Telly, there's just some really stupid people in the world who can't stand to see it when people of different races are friends.
Why not?
I have no idea, Telly, but that was one of those awful people. Because Save's skin is brown and mine is white, he thinks we shouldn't be friends. It drove him nuts just to see us having fun together.
What has color got to do with being friends?
Nothing. Nothing at all. That's the point.
So I guess I'm wondering, Eric, if these messages delivered to children have stayed with them. Like, is there any measurable effect of all of this teaching social values to children?
Well, I haven't done any studies of my own, but certainly what's wonderful about Sesame Workshop, the company that does Sesame Street, they consult a lot of experts in the field to make sure that the messaging that they're providing the children is positive and doesn't have any unintended negative consequences. It came along in 1969 after a pretty tough decade where we saw MLK assassinated, we saw JFK assassinated, we saw the Vietnam War reach its height, we saw struggles in cities over civil rights issues, even though landmark civil rights legislation passed, riots in Watts, riots in other urban areas. And along comes this show that is centered on racial harmony and that is teaching kids that, you know, it's a wonderful thing for people of all different kinds of colors, not just black and white, but purple and yellow and orange and blue to play together. And that it seems like that was a message that was sorely needed at the time and is sorely needed now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one reason why the show's endured.
Yeah. Well, speaking of all different colors of the rainbow, here's another scene. This is a recent scene. I think it's from this year, in which Elmo, a Muppet named Lily, and an adult named Sophia are painting a rainbow. And all of a sudden, they get to the purple part of the rainbow, and Lily becomes sad.
It's just that, well, my bedroom is purple, and purple's my favorite color, and it reminds me of my bedroom. And, well, we don't have our own apartment anymore, and we've been staying in all different kinds of places.
Lily, no matter where you are, always remember. The thing about home is more than a house or an apartment. Home is really where the love is. That's why you and your parents are staying with me for a while. And we're gonna make sure that no matter what, there's always lots of love.
Yeah, love.
Oh, that's so sweet. I wonder though, so they're taking on homelessness. They added a character who has a parent addicted to opioids, another character in foster care. I wonder if sometimes mm-hmm. it's too much for kids. It's like these are really heavy, weighty issues, even for adults.
Well, I think one of the great messages of shows like Sesame Street is that they push back against this conventional wisdom that children can't handle weighty topics. Mm. I think often that attitude is much more about making adults feel comfortable than it is about helping kids deal with things that we know are going on in their lives. And it only makes sense that a TV show that is powered by so much research and so much expertise and so much experience would try to create programming that makes those situations easier for them and helps them understand them, rather than pretending they don't exist or papering over them or ignoring them. So that's one reason why I've respected Sesame Street so much. They never tried to shy away from those subjects.
Well, now Sesame Street, you can still see it on PBS, but the first viewing, I guess, of new episodes is on HBO.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm wondering what you think critically about the show. How has it changed? It seems to have a lot more money now and gotten glitzier. It's got special effects and animation and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. The effects have gotten a little better, which is, I mean, you know, what's important is to sort of safeguard the financial future of the show and its alliance with HBO. And now it will be on HBO Max, which is a streaming service that HBO's owners are creating. That is about securing the financial future of the show. You know, it's a necessary alliance, I think, in order to preserve a show that has proven so valuable over the years and that has created so much goodwill, so many indelible characters. I mean, Kermit the Frog and Bert and Ernie and Mr. Hooper and Maria and Gordon. And you could go on and on, the Snuffleupagus.
Don't forget Oscar, you know, and the Cookie Monster.
Don't forget Oscar the Grouch or the Cookie Monster. I mean, you know, and that also points to something that was special about the show, that is special about the show, that I also think preserves it, is the Muppets. You know, this was the first TV show that featured the Muppets that was widely successful. And so it also turned them into a gigantic brand, something that children have fallen in love with. They've created so many other wonderful spinoffs and featuring these characters in other venues. So not only did Sesame Street create this wonderful kids program, it also allowed these characters into our hearts and allowed them to create other wonderful platforms. So it's such an inspiring success story in so many ways.
So you don't think it's suffered from going over to HBO? And
I mean, there may be people who are nostalgic for the old days when they never showed the Muppets legs and they always had to come up with these funky ways of allowing the puppeteers to sort of manipulate the puppets without being seen. There is a nostalgia to that, but you know, I've watched a lot of the newer episodes for HBO, and they look better. They look nicer. The special effects are a little better. They can try things and push the envelope a little bit more in what they're portraying. I don't think the show has suffered at all in making its transition. And like I said, you know, they needed some kind of patron. You know, it helps to have a consistent financial source. So if they have the resources to really try things and really go for new kinds of characters and create new platforms, there's going to be four new shows connected to Sesame Street on HBO Max. So you're going to get all kinds of great new programming, and that, and some of that programming, a lot of that programming is going to find its way to PBS and PBS Kids. So, you know, I think overall it's worked out very well.
So there's Sesame Street spinoffs now?
There are going to be four new shows connected to Sesame Street, produced by Sesame Workshop, that will air on HBO Max. And I'm pretty sure those shows will migrate to PBS and PBS Kids. So, you know, everyone will be able to see them eventually.
Eric Deggans is TV critic for NPR. Eric, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, comedian Mike Birbiglia on becoming a dad very, very reluctantly. That's next on Press Play.